You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, my. It happened. It finally happened. Yes, a little later on, I want to tell you about, you know, this the amazing Mitt Romney machine and their efforts yesterday to say, have you noticed that that guy in the White House doesn't quite look like the normal White House? We'll get into that. And actually, some amazing stuff. Elizabeth Warren's agency did a remarkable job on Capital One Bank. You know, the
what's in your wallet?
All right. Well, apparently what's in your wallet is a little less money because they've been engaging in shady practices, shall we say. Deceptive marketing techniques is the phrase. But we'll get to that. The heirs to the Walmart fortune are making news, courtesy of the Federal Reserve today. But this is, I think, just one of the coolest stories because this is, you know, political theater is so good because it tells stories. We remember things by virtue of story. Human beings are story machines. It makes us unique from all other animals. I don't think, you know, my three cats sit around and say, hey, you know, you want to hear a good story about what Louise did yesterday? Just doesn't happen, right? I mean, maybe they do, but I'm guessing they have narratives. You know, it's like, hey, there's a stranger in the house, attack them. You know, I know that they have narratives, but humans are kind of uniquely story machines. And so if you can tell stories, particularly absurd stories that illustrate things, it is such a great way to let people know what's really going on. And it has happened. Thanks to the Supreme Court and their Citizens United decision, corporations in America are now considered people. But as you know, it didn't always used to be this way. First modern corporations began forming in the 1880s. And after we realized the kind of power these corporations had on society, you know, the Rockefeller Trusts, the Carnegie Steel Trusts, the Mellon Banking Trust, and the danger they could pose to our democracy, Congress passed the Tillman Act in 1907, which outlawed corporations from donating to politicians. Stood for 100 years, a little more. And fast forward a century, and corporations are now donating to politicians without any limits, or at least a political assisting political campaigns. Why? Because the Supreme Court decided to blow up the sensibility of the Tillman Act and replace it with the mind-bogglingly idiotic idea that corporations are people and that money is not property, it's speech. And if corporations are people and we follow that logic to its final conclusion, then corporations should be allowed to get married, right? Well, King County, Washington, the county that Seattle's in, followed that Citizens United logic and showed how incredibly absurd it is by issuing a marriage license for a living, breathing woman to marry an inanimate, all-powerful corporation. In a beautiful and heartfelt wedding ceremony in King County, Washington, Ms. Angela Marie Vogel, who's going to be on our show in a few minutes, married corporate person, a Washington State corporation. Here is the opening remarks from the minister opening the ceremony.
Today we celebrate our absorption into the new image of corporate commodification of all flesh, blood, and bone. As Angela offers her life in submission, may we also offer our own. All in the name of the brave new world, the brave new future, the brave new evolution of corporate control in whom we seek security, and all God's children said,
Amen.
There you go. The wedding ceremony was attended by roughly 100 guests and was presided over by Pastor Rich Lang, who you just heard. He presided over a brilliant ceremony that was also absolutely brilliant political theater. Here's the corporation's vow. Clip number two.
Corporate person, do you choose this mortal woman to be your wedded wife? To live with her in the holy state of matrimony, the commodified state of matrimony. Will you insert into her your purposes? Structure her life to increase your value? Receive her adoration as chains to enslave her? Will you silence her voice, surveil her movements, monitor her vagina, and restrict her opinions while increasing the illusion of her choices as long as she remains your property? an object of your lack of affection. If the shareholders would respond, we will.
And the shareholders would respond. And their shareholders, they were standing there and they said, yes, we will. Because the corporation, I mean, it's just a mute statue right there. And it was just, it was hysterical. The Pastor Lang told the crowd that for Angela, dear sweet victim of corporate propaganda, that she has been swept up in a love that knows no boundaries, nor limits, no morals concern. Lang went on to say that we gather knowing that the love that binds them together will end in the grief and tragedy of Angela's mortal death, even as corporate person lives on, marrying again and again with the adoration and support of shareholders worldwide. Here was Angela's vow.
Angela, do you choose this legal fiction to be your wedded husband, to live with him in the commodified state of matrimony? Will you love and honor and keep him, serve him in sickness and in health, in prosperity and in poverty? Will you practice kindness and consideration towards him? Will you defend his reputation and continually give up your own time, talent, treasure, and trophies just to pleasure him again and again? Will you forsake all other loyalties and priorities, being faithful unto only unto him as long as you shall live? If so, would you say, I will?
I don't think I have any choice.
I don't think I have any choice. Yes, do you want health insurance? You got to talk to a corporation. You want to bank? You got to talk to a corporation. Well, actually, you have a credit union as an option. There is a nonprofit, member-owned option for banking. So, anyhow, finally, at the end of the ceremony, Pastor Lang closed this, actually, clip number four, rather than reading it to you. Let me just... play it for you, because it's brilliant. Here's Pastor Lang.
On behalf of our true religion, the worship of the dollar, and in compliance with the laws of this land, I pronounce as an ordained United Methodist pastor that they are from this day forward husband and wife, one corporate flesh, to the glory of mammon and to the devastation of all the earth and its resources. Corporate person and Angela, may your children become sacrifices in war for greater market gain. May your wealth be without end. May your desire for more always be insatiable. May you begin every day in expectation of profit and end every night resting secure in each other's bank accounts. May your continuous lies never be revealed. May your lawlessness never be held accountable. May your theft be forgiven. And may you own this nation locked, stock, and barrel until freedom is no more. You may kiss and merge.
And then they had everybody take out dollar bills and throw them in the air, right? When our Constitution was written, the word person meant a living and breathing human being. But over time, the Supreme Court has expanded the definition of person, and only, by the way, the Supreme Court, Congress never did it, President never did it, to include inanimate, non-living, economy-destroying, and at times downright sociopathic and evil corporations. Over time, we've witnessed the corruption of our American democracy and a shift to a corporate oligarchy, where we've lost much of the control of our control over our American politics. We've lost that to not just domestic corporations, transnational corporations. We've allowed the power and control that corporations have in America to grow so much that we're left with a post-Citizens United logic that a living, breathing human can marry the likes of Walmart or ExxonMobil. It's time we restored sanity to America, brought the word person back to the vision of our founding fathers, where corporations were not people and money certainly was not speech. And go to movetoamend.org and help redefine marriage as between two living and breathing human beings. Right? I mean, there's this whole life. Where's the American Family Council or whatever? You know, where are all these wackadoodles who come on our show all the time? Marriage is between two people. Yeah, is it really?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And in a few minutes, you're going to meet the blushing bride and learn all about I-103.org, Initiative 103.
People.
Corporations are people, my friend.
People who need people.
Of course they are. Everything corporations earn ultimately goes to people.
All the luckiest people.
Yeah, corporations are People? Really? Paul's trying to get Angela on the line right now. I think he was a little late on the uptake there, and but you know, hopefully she'll be with us in just a minute, because I would love to hear her story. And it's amazing, you know, the this whole idea that corporations are people really first was presented to the American public in 1886. And it was insane then. In fact, Delphin Delmas, the lawyer who argued on behalf of Santa Clara County in the Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad case in 1886 in front of the Supreme Court, said, "If you're asserting that corporations are persons, do you mean that they should be allowed to enter into legal matrimony?" And J.W. Sanderson, who was the lawyer for the railroads, who was arguing that corporations were people, said, "No, that would be absurd." Well, Angela Marie Vogel is on the line. Am I saying it right, Angela?
Yep, that's right.
Great. You are the bride of the corporation. You're an activist with Envision Seattle, and the website, digits 103.org, Seattle's Community Bill of Rights Initiative 103. It looks really cool. Angela, thank you, and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me about your wedding.
It was beautiful. Everything was donated. We didn't spend any money. And it was just really fun to see how many people in the community wanted to reach out and be a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
We had flowers donated. We had all different musicians that wanted to be a part of it. Of course, Pastor Rich Lang is always amazing.
Yeah.
And so it was a really beautiful ceremony. We even had a marching band all the way down to the King County Admin Building.
Wow.
And a lot of community support. A lot of people joined in and stopped and listened to the ceremony and honks and cheers. And so clearly this isn't just a cause for crazy activists.
Yeah, no,
a lot of
this
in the
is
community are into.
Yeah, this is catching on. Now I'm curious. I reported in the news that King County actually gave you a wedding license. Is that true?
They did. So the way that it works when you apply for your marriage license is that you actually have to wait 3 days to have, like, the judge or pastor or whatever sign it.
Mm-hmm.
So we were issued the license. It wouldn't have been finalized until Friday.
Mm-hmm.
They have come back now and said that they are going to be denying it and refunding our license fee because of the age of corporate person. Corporate person was born on June 6th. 2012. So he's only a month and a half old.
So you cannot marry a month and a half old person.
What that implies to me is that if I were trying to marry, you know,
Standard Oil,
Microsoft or Boeing or whatever,
yeah,
they're older than 18 years. What reason are they going to come up with?
Right, you could have married Halliburton. It's only 30, 40 years old, maybe 50. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or Standard Oil, it's only 140 years old.
yeah, exactly. So I think it speaks a lot to the legitimacy of what we were doing, that was the only reason they could come up with to turn the
That was the only excuse they had, that the corporation was a month and a half old. Now, tell me about I-103. Just seriously here, Seattle's Community Bill of Rights. This is Initiative 103, i103.org. It's a great website. Tell me, what are you all doing there?
First and the most important part is to eliminate corporate personhood in Seattle politics. We have a lot of examples of how corporate personhood in Seattle costs us a lot of money. I would say, the most recent example is lawsuits from the phone book companies saying that leaving a phone book on your front porch is free speech. And clearly, you know, We're not saying that corporations shouldn't exist at all, and so clearly there have to be, you know, some rights and such associated with that, but not in such a – they shouldn't get constitutional rights. You know, there shouldn't
Sure.
be free speech and that sort of thing. But I-103 also covers a lot of other bases that would help bring the rights back to the community rather than to the corporations.
I-103 is a Seattle. This is just a city
–
metropolitan
–
Initiative, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be on the ballot in November, in the November elections?
No. If we can get about 20,000 more signatures by the end of September, then it'll be on the ballot in 2013.
Okay, great.
The Seattle Initiative process is not really well designed for citizen action.
Mm-hmm.
It's really well designed for people that want to go pay signature gatherers.
Yeah.
And part of I-103 would eliminate paid signature gatherers, so of course we haven't done that.
Right, right. So what we need now, do people need to be residents of Seattle to sign your petition?
Yes.
Okay, so,
but
so
if they are residents of Seattle, what they can best do to help, you can go on the I-103 website and print off petition sheets, mm-hmm. and a copy of the petition,
right.
and just, you know, get your friends and your neighbors and whoever you know in Seattle to sign it and then mail it back to us.
Right. So all of our listeners that listening on Talk 1090 in Seattle, and I'll be there this weekend, by the way, which should be a lot of fun. Go to i103.org. And then print it out and get registered Seattle-based voters. And now, people who are not in Seattle who want to support what you're doing, is there a way that they can do that on the i103.org website?
They should be able to donate.
Okay, great.
That would be really helpful.
Yeah, and the other thing is do it in your town.
That's exactly it. I hope I'm not taking up too much time, but I'm going to tell a really quick little story here.
We only have about 30 seconds.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll skip the story, but I just want to say that, you know, we've already seen the states at state levels failing, you know, to get corporations out of our politics.
Right.
We really need to be working at community levels. That's where we can affect the most change.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And this is something where the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDEF.org, has been very active as well. But good on you, Angela, for being an activist and using the theater of the absurd to highlight and wake people up. Thank you so much, Angela.
Thank you, Tom. Have a great day.
And please give our best to the good pastor and you know, everybody who is involved. Angela Marie Bova, i103.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And after this brief opportunity for you to support your local station and catch the news, we'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls. Stick around.
Love and marriage, love and marriage. They go together like a horse and carriage. This I'll tell you, brother. You can't have one without the other.
Especially if it's, marriage, woman in corporation. Or man in corporation. I mean, corporations don't necessarily have to be male. Or it could be a gay marriage. It could be, who knows? I mean, have we assigned a gender to corporations? They kind of see, you know, being obnoxious and pushy, they're more testosterone driven, it seems. And of course, in corporate boardrooms, you see men outnumbering women by massive numbers. You see where a woman was just appointed CEO of, Yahoo, I believe, day before yesterday. And she's pregnant, first woman CEO of a Fortune 500 company ever, and God bless her. But so I guess for the moment you'd probably assume that corporations are male. Okay, I a couple of serious things. Then I'm going to pick up your phone calls here. President Obama, Romney, poor mittens. You know, yesterday I asked you the question: why is he not releasing his tax returns? And a lot of people had a lot of great suggestions. Huffington Post picked that up today. I mean, not necessarily for me. They just picked up the topic. Why Romney won't really disclose his tax returns. 35% won't disclose his tax returns until Obama reveals every shopping list since 2004. Doesn't want to compete with The Dark Knight Rises. Was a primary shareholder of Death Row Records from 92 to 97. Accidentally donated $20 to Planned Parenthood once. Not sure which man room and which house the shoebox they were saved in is. Not convinced that 1999 was a real year. Or owned the world's biggest alpaca farm. Yeah. Hmm. It sort of sounds like a late night show gig. But in any case, in response to this, I mean, I was asking this question. I think all across America people are asking the question, what is in Romney's tax returns that he wants to hide? What is it that he's working so hard to hide? Now, one of the things that is not in his 2010 tax return is the FBAR. No, it's not what it sounds like. It's the foreign bank, disclosure of some kind, FBAR. It's an acronym that has to do with foreign banking. And he has listed on his tax return that he has a Swiss bank account. But he did, and you have to never having had a Swiss bank account, I can't give you personal knowledge of this, but my understanding is that if you have one, actually I have a personal story to tell you about this. When I was living in Germany, this was back in '86 when Louise and I and our kids lived in Germany for a year, and I had to have a checking account. So I opened it at the local German bank, but I thought, hey, I'm right next door to Switzerland. We were going to Switzerland. You know, we used to do these kind of trips around Europe from time to time. I mean, we had sold a business and we were basically had taken this year off to do volunteer work with this international relief organization. And that was like in spurts. You know, I'd go to Peru for 2 weeks and then come back and I'd have a couple of weeks off. And so I thought, hey, why not open a Swiss bank account? And so I contacted a couple of Swiss banks because, hey, you know, wouldn't it be cool to have a Swiss bank account to just impress your friends, if nothing else? Well, I have a German bank account when I could have a Swiss bank account because, you know, all the European banks, basically, you can take a check from any European bank. You literally write in what the denomination is. You'd say Swiss, SFR, Swiss francs, or DM, Deutsche Marks. You know, this was before the euro. And so it really wouldn't matter. What I discovered was that with a German bank account, they're like American bank accounts, right? They pay interest on your deposits and all that kind of stuff. Swiss bank accounts, you have to pay them. Now, you know, this was not a lot of money, but even if it's millions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions or billions, you open a Swiss bank account, they don't give you a toaster. They don't even pay you interest. They charge you for the privilege of your keeping your money in their bank, which they then go out and make money on, which is why Switzerland is so rich. Now, what are they charging for? Why would somebody pay the Swiss to have a secret Swiss bank account? Because it's secret. And that FBAR, if I'm using the acronym the way CPAs use it, and I'm not sure if I am, but you know, because I've read about it in news reports, but again, I'm not a CPA either. But this federal disclosure form of foreign banking, this IRS disclosure form of foreign banking reports, Romney did not release. So he did not, for 2010, for the 1 year that he says, oh, you guys have all my tax returns. Actually, we don't. His tax returns were incomplete. They do not contain the contents of his Swiss bank account. We don't know why he opened it, why he's losing money on it, because you do. You pay the Swiss banks to have a Swiss bank account. Why? So, anyway. Foreign Bank and Financial Accounts Report. FBAR? FBAR. Thank you very much, Shano. James in St. Charles, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was just listening to your interview with the new bride.
Mm-hmm.
And the King County people said that corporate person was only a month and a half old.
Right. And therefore,
corporate person a minor.
Right.
Well, isn't it true that in some circumstances, parents will give permission for their children of minor age to be married? And if that's the case, then could not the shareholders, a corporate person, give such permission?
Well, theoretically, but usually there's a bottom threshold on that. You know, I have no idea what the age of consent and age of marriage laws are in Washington state. I know when I was growing up in Michigan, if you were 18, as I recall, anyway, if you were 18, you could get married. If you were 16 to 18, you could get married with your permission, with the permission of your parents. But after 18, you didn't need your parents' permission, as I recall. And if you were under 16, you just plain old flat out couldn't get married. In fact, Jerry Lee Lewis got in all kinds of trouble because not only did he marry his cousin, but she was 15. And I guess, you know, that might have been the age of consent, but I think it was 16 in Tennessee or Kentucky, whatever state he was from. And Shane, you have to be 18 to enter into a contract. So, you know, yeah. So how are they doing it? So good idea, James,
but. you have to be 18 to enter into a contract, then how are corporations signing all these contracts all the way?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, this little corporation that Louise and I own that owns this radio show, actually before the radio show was the corporation that we use for all of the income from my writing, because you generate expenses when you write books and you want to be able to deduct those. And I've had this corporation for like at least 15 years, maybe 20 years. I should check and see if my corporation is more than 18 years old. Maybe Angela would like to consider somebody else. You know, it's I don't know.
There you go. get an activist in the family.
Yeah, and Louise is also an owner of it. I mean, you know, the two of us are 50-50 owners of the corporation, so does that make it a threesome? Well, now are we coming into bigamy laws or polygamy laws?
Yeah.
I don't know. That could be kind of messy. James, thanks a lot for the call. Bob in Northville, Michigan. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I really like the story about the corporate shotgun wedding.
Yeah.
But I have a similar example.
Mm-hmm.
If corporations are people, like Romney says, corporations are people, my friend.
Right.
How many corporations has he taken over and, you know, stole their pensions, bankrupted the company? So if you take over a person and, you know, steal from them and bankrupt them, aren't you a kidnapper and a thief?
Well, or beyond that, the 13th Amendment was ratified on December 6, 1865, and it says neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime wherein the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Maybe it's not slavery to be married to a corporation. I thought maybe it was unconstitutional, but maybe it's not.
Yeah.
Was the 15th Amendment is just okay. Your right to vote shall not be abridged based on race, color, or previous condition of servitude. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Good question.
I only called it a shotgun wedding because she said, "Well, I guess I don't have a choice."
Right. Right. Thanks a lot, Bob, for the call. I mean, you know, I suppose it's good that King County retroactively pulled back the marriage license because now she doesn't have to worry about getting a divorce. Sonia?
Yes.
Am I saying that right in Dayton, Ohio?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Okay. I would like to comment on corporations and a couple of other things. First of all, corporations do not pay taxes like the 99% of us do. And
well, they have many more vehicles to avoid paying taxes. In fact, the well over 95% of American corporations pay no taxes whatsoever.
Exactly. And that's my point.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got the Walmart people that have $90 billion, you know.
Right.
Suppose they were to be taxed the same way that the 99% are taxed. That would help the deficit.
Right, but thanks to the Reagan administration and then the George W. Bush administration, W dropped the capital gains tax from 20% down to 15%. When those Walton heirs are sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive,
right.
When that dividend check does arrive, or it's actually probably direct deposited to their bank accounts, they pay a maximum 15% income tax on it because it's capital gains, don't you know, and capitalists have their own separate tax bracket. Sonia, thank you for the call. And once again, this raises the question that I raised yesterday is why is it that Mitt Romney and other professional capitalists, people who live off capital, people who make their money with money rather than make their money by working, why do they pay a lower tax rate again? Why?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And we have just upgraded our iPad app, our iPhone and iPad app, for the new iPad Retina display. It's really super cool. It's free. It's over at TomHartman.com. You know, nothing wrong with taking care of business. That's a fine thing, but there are limits, I suppose. Robin in Bentonville, Arkansas, is that the home of the world headquarters of Walmart, Robin?
It indeed is.
My goodness. You're not one of the Walton heirs calling to take me to task, are you?
We call them Walmartians.
Walmartians? Oh, my. Okay, so what's on your mind today, Robin?
Well, I want to talk about Bain Capital and I'm a CEO and entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And as a CEO, very thought of leaving all my assets in my company and leaving for two and a half years and not having any control of those assets. Well, if I did that, I'd be the Pope. I mean, I can't wrap my head around that argument.
I have been trying to too, and I think it's a testimonial to how few people in America have ever started their own business. That all of America, when Mitt Romney said, yes, I started this company, I owned 100% of it, I was the CEO, and I left for 3 years, and I had no idea what they were doing with my company, even though it was all of my assets, and all of America didn't go, what?
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I'd like to talk about is any good entrepreneur finds a niche. They recognize something, whether a new product, a new way of doing business, whatever.
Right.
But what Bain Capital did, and apparently it was Mr. Romney's baby, so it was the business model. The business model was to go in and find a weakened company, rape it, take the assets, milk the line of credit, bankrupt it, and then leave the pension fund for the government to pick up, which means you and I picked it up.
Right.
Now, that's a business plan. And they've done it for years. And I think anybody that had to shave every morning and look themselves in the eyes could not have a moral center.
Yeah. Well, I don't disagree at all. And this is where sociopathy and business intersect, because to be a genuine business person in the sense that your soul mission in life is to maximize profits. Most of the business people I know, that's not their sole mission in life. Most of the entrepreneurs I know, that's not their sole mission in life. They want to build a company, but they also want to be part of the community. They want their customers to be happy. They want their employees to be happy. You do things to make people part of the family, to make them, whether it's the employee family,
right,
the customer family, the community family.
To make sure that they have health care.
Yeah. Yeah, for example.
And even if it comes out of your own back pocket, these are people that you care about.
Yeah, we do that here. All of my full-time employees get 100% paid for health insurance. It adds considerably when you add it all up to the cost of running the business, but I think that it's just a fair and reasonable thing. I wouldn't want to work for a company that didn't offer that, and therefore my company is going to offer that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I just find that business model troublesome for him. I don't know if, here in Northwest Arkansas, we have a Democratic performance of about 30%. So
yeah.
Most of the businesses here are Republican-run businesses.
Yeah.
And I can attest that most of them are of the same ilk.
Yeah. Well, that's
dollar and nothing else.
Yeah. Sorry to hear that. Robin, I got to move along, but thank you for the call, and thanks for your insightful comments. David in Marshalltown, Iowa. Hey, David. Thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio.
Hi.
What's up?
Glad you took my call.
Sure.
If corporate is a person, where's the birth certificate, and where's the doctor that signed the birth certificate? And if they don't, they can't be considered a person.
Right. So we need to get Donald Trump on this one. Thank you, David. Excellent point. Rich in Middletown, Tennessee, or Maryland, rather. Excuse me. Hey, Rich, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I have a question about the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if this person, being the corporation, is too young to wed,
right,
what age does this person have to be to make a rational business decision?
Oh, that's a good question. Or here's another one. If the corporation throws a Christmas party and serves alcohol, can it go to jail for possession, minor in possession?
It should.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good one. I mean, this is what we're all seeing here, and, fairly clearly, is the absurdity of the Supreme Court. George in Rockville, Maryland, listening on TomHartman.com. Hey, George, what's up? George? Oh, George is gone. Lawrence in Berkeley, California. Hey, Lawrence, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I have very good news that is 230 years old.
Okay.
Namely, according to the Constitution, it is not necessary to have a constitutional amendment to overthrow Citizens United. It can be done by a majority vote in the Congress, and here's why. By the way, I get this from Counterpunch, from the Rob Hager and James Mark Leas article. Article 3
Article 3, Section 2, all Congress has to do is assert their right to regulate the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it says, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction both as to law and fact, with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress shall make.
That's right. And Congress could pass a law saying that the Supreme Court does not have the authority to rule on matters having to do with campaign finances. End of discussion. And but this Congress, and not just this Congress, I mean every Congress going back I don't know how long it's been that the Supreme Court has been asserting that they don't have to abide by the federal code of judicial conduct, of judicial ethics. It certainly is the Roberts Court. I believe that it was the I'm guessing this probably goes back to like the 80s, maybe the 70s. But the Supreme Court, I mean, the Congress hasn't even had the guts to say, you guys have to let cameras in the courtroom. You guys have to let recording devices in the courtroom. You guys, in other words, open meetings, right? You guys have to, for public discussion, for public debate. The public should be able to participate. Congress has not had the guts to pass a law saying that the Supreme Court has to follow the judicial code of conduct, which, of course, would kick Clarence Thomas out because of his wife's activities and because of what he was doing around Bush v. Gore and Scalia because of his duck hunting with Dick Cheney when Cheney was a defendant before the court, all those other things. So, spot on, Lawrence. Spot on. We will be back with term limits.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, so is there a really easy solution to corruption in government? Just like, don't throw the bums out, force them out after a certain period of time. Could it be? Robin Fawcett is with us, partner at Schutz and Bowen, LLP. Am I saying all this right, Robin?
Yes, you are. Robin Fawcett, Schutz and Bowen. Yes, thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. And you are also the author of American Manifesto, which people can find over at Amazon.com. And you're a management, labor, and employment law partner. And you seem to believe very strongly that we can solve our problems in this country by having term limits. Explain this to me.
Okay, not just term limits, but one-term limit. I wrote this book not to be a conservative diatribe at all, but to point out that senators and congressmen, in my opinion, are making their proposals and their decisions and casting their votes primarily to get themselves reelected instead of based on evidence, reasoning, and in short, what's best for our country. And that could be ended, in my opinion, by taking re-election out of the picture entirely so that a person could be a senator or a congressperson for 4 years. I arbitrarily chose 4 years, and that would be it for life, and then they'd have to go back and make good in the private sector.
You realize this was discussed for several days. I mean, this was one of the longer discussions that was held during the Constitutional Convention. James Madison, it's at some length in his notes from 1787. And one of the questions that was asked is, what's the difference between an election and a reelection? I mean, in both cases, wouldn't you want to vote for the person who says that they're going to do the things that you want done? And if that's the case, then there functionally is no difference between an election and a reelection, and therefore you wouldn't want to bar reelection.
Well, I would want to bar it for this reason. That is, when you're running for the first time, you, of course, have to present yourself as a competent, honest, uncorruptible person. And if you know you're only there for one term, I think the more honest and less corruptible, and I hope more competent people would present themselves. and the people who would like to really be there for life won't bother to run at all.
But if we had that kind of a situation, if the main thing that is corrupting our politics is money, whether it's, you know, billionaires buying people off, corporations buying people off, unions buying people off, whatever. I mean, you know, pick your poison, right? Pick your side. If it's money, then why would it be any, why would somebody who just comes forward and says, hi, I'm running for the Senate for the very first time, you know, with $1 million from the Koch brothers or with $1 million from the AFL-CIO in my back pocket, be any different than somebody who says, hi, I'm running for re-election with $1 million from the Koch brothers or $1 million from the AFL-CIO in my back pocket? I don't get why there's any difference between the two.
The person you hypothesize, in my opinion, probably would not exist. The person with the $1 million from the union or the environmentalists or the NRA or the trial lawyers would be someone who had already been in office and proven himself to be willing to take.
But how did they get to office? They got to office by campaigning, and that campaigning costs money, and that's where the corruption occurs. Why don't we, instead of having term limits, which basically create a permanent institution, rather than the institutional memory being the elder statesmen and women, the permanent infrastructure becomes the lobbyists. Right now, I mean, this is, we saw this with the Tea Party group, right? You've got this Tea Party crowd that just came in, the 90 some odd Republicans, freshman Republicans. They are the richest in the history of the United States in the House of Representatives, and they have taken more corporate money than any group of freshmen in history. Right up there at the top, and taken it from lobbyists. So it's like they came in, how does the system work? I don't know. Okay, well, let's talk to Jack Abramoff. He's not in the lobbying business anymore, but let's talk to Grover Norquist. He runs a big lobby shop. You know, he represents a bunch of clients. Let's see what he wants. And on the list goes. So the problem with term limits is that it blows up the institutional memory and replaces it with an extra elected or non-elected institutional memory, that being the lobbying infrastructure. And you know, this doesn't seem to me to inure any benefit to our constitution, to us, to we the people. Why not instead say no money in politics?
Well, to answer that question first, because you can't. The First Amendment gives you the right to spend money on politics.
Not true.
But to your,
not
to
true.
Your main point is a very, very good question, and the answer is remember, in American Manifesto, it's 4 years, not just 2 years. If you're there for 4 years and never again, you're not going to care what the lobbyist says any more than you're going to care what Mitch McConnell or Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi or John Boehner says. You're going to look at the evidence, and you're going to think about it, and you're going to do some research, and you're going to have good staffers.
But the evidence belies that, Robin. If you look at, for example, Chris Dodd, I mean, everybody thought he was a decent senator and a good guy, and he was at least everybody on my side did. And when he was leaving, you know, it was like, okay, he's going to have a dignified retirement, and he's got a good pension and all this kind of stuff. And in the last year, it was like all these votes that really seemed to help out the banksters, and all of a sudden he's a lobbyist for the banksters, making $1 million a year. Surprise, surprise. Why would somebody who knows that they're a lame duck, if you look at the history of lame ducks, right now we've got a revolving door. If you are a congressperson who has left Congress, you can start in this town. Now, on K Street, you start at $1 million a year. If you're a senator, you start at $3 million a year. If you're a staffer to a member of Congress or a senator, you start at $325,000 a year. I mean, that's the kind of money that people make as lame ducks. So if you had these term limits, everybody would be a lame duck. The biggest objection that Madison and most of his colleagues, and the Federalists actually agreed with this, Madison ultimately was one of the anti-Federalists, but, you know, they agreed with it, to term limits was that only the wealthy would be able to run for political office, because working people and farmers back in that day, you know, about 80% of Americans were farmers, working people and farmers would not be able to take the time off from their farm, from their business just for a year or two or 4 years. But on the other hand, if somebody said, okay, I'm going to spend my life in public service, I'm going to be, you know, like Joe Biden or, you know, somebody who's literally spent their whole life, or John McCain, his entire life, he's taken a paycheck either from the military or from Congress. And you know, I'm going to do that. I'm going to serve my country that way. That if they did that, that would actually be a noble and honorable thing if they were not corruptible. You say that you can't take money out of politics. It's not in the Constitution. The First Amendment does not say that money is speech. In fact, money is clearly property. It's covered by the Commerce Clause, not by the First Amendment. Our Supreme Court has said that money is speech, but that's a relatively recent document. In 1907, the Congress said you can't give money to in the Tillman Act, you know, in the Teddy Roosevelt Republican administration, made it illegal.
You want me to respond to that?
Yeah, sure. In fact, we got about a minute. It's all yours.
If the Supreme Court says it, whether you agree with it or not, it's the law.
Not if you pass a constitutional amendment to overturn it.
Well, that's not the constitutional amendment that I'm advocating in this book. The Supreme Court has said that you can spend money, unlimited money, to elect candidates, and I think that's one of the corrupting factors. But to your main point, which is an interesting one that needs to be responded to, if everybody up there is there for 4 years only, nobody's a lame duck. They're simply there with the full power of a U.S. senator or a U.S. congressman.
Okay, I got your point. Robin, we're out of time. Robin, partner at ChutzenBowen. .com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And Robin's book is over at Amazon.com, American Manifesto. You can check it out. Robin, thank you very much for being with us.
Very welcome. Thank you for having me, sir.
My pleasure. Good talking with you.
We just lost track along the way. I'm coming to terms. I'm starting to learn.
So, you know, there's a lot of people who are looking at our democracy, at our republic, and, or as James Madison in his later years would call it, our democratic republic. There's a lot of people looking at this and saying, something's really wrong. And we got to figure out a way to solve this problem. And I think, you know, our previous guest, it was a good faith effort. Okay, let's do term limits. Let's stop people from being able to run for office more than twice in the House of Representatives, 4-year term limits. And I'm assuming maybe 2 years for the Senate he had in mind. We did this with the White House. And frankly, I'm not sure it's worked to our benefit. Now, President George Washington could have easily been elected for a third term, but he chose to only serve 2 terms. And that example then was followed by President Jefferson, who was elected in 1800 and then in 1804 reelected, and in 1808 could have easily gotten reelected, chose not to, and, you know, James Madison came along. And so there's, you know, we had this history in the United States of people basically volunteering or voluntarily only running for 2 terms. Although I believe that there has been at least one case where a president has run for a third term outside of Franklin Roosevelt. And then FDR ran for 2 terms, and then the third term, we still weren't out of the Great Depression, and war was looming in Europe, and Americans really trusted this guy. He won, you know, in landslides in his second, third, and fourth elections. He was elected 4 times, and the Republicans were so horrified by this that a Democrat could run 4 times that they amended the Constitution to put term limits in on the presidency. And I'm not sure that's worked to our benefit. I genuinely don't think it has. I think that the best kind of term limit is an election. Mike in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? What you guys were talking about the term limit, I don't think that would do. That would just make the situation we're in right now much worse.
I think so.
And I think that probably the only solution that comes to my mind would be to hold anybody, no matter where they come from, accountable to what they do. You know, if they're in those positions, why shouldn't they be held accountable like the regular people, you know, the laws are there, why don't they apply to everybody?
Well, they're being held accountable right now by the NRA. I mean, the NRA, for example, on this transparency bill, the Disclose Act that was in front of Congress, the NRA said, we will score you, you know. If...
Yeah. But
I know you mean they're supposed to be held accountable by us.
Right. By the law, by the Justice Department.
Right. But they're, I see. In other words, let's expand the definition of corrupt practices or corrupt behavior in office.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that there's a very, very fine line between lobbying and bribery, and we long ago crossed that line, and much to our detriment. Well said, Mike. Thank you. Joe in Williamston, Michigan. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. What's up?
I just have a great quote from a French economist, Frederic Bastiat. I believe I'm saying that right. He said, when plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men living in society, they create for themselves, in the course of time, a legal system that authorizes it and a moral code that glorifies it. I think that's exactly what we have today.
Yeah, well, let me match your quote with a little more contemporary quote. This is from John Kenneth Galbraith, you know, who's now deceased, but he was, you know, one of the major advisors to Franklin Roosevelt, helped put together the New Deal. He said, the modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy. That is, the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it, and that's what we have today.
There you go. Okay, thanks a lot for the call. Moses in St. Ann, Illinois. Hey, Moses, what's up?
Oh, I'm always glad to hear you. The gentleman you had on just a little while ago talking about term limits,
yes.
I want to go back to when I was a child. I used to go to the Catholic school, and I had a priest that I had a discussion with one day, and it was, back then, we were talking about communism a lot. And the thing I asked the priest was, are there priests who are communists? He said, no, there are not priests who are communists, but there are communists who are priests. In other words, you can have an infiltrator in there, and then you don't know what you're getting until it shows his real colors, and by then, it's very hard to do something about it.
Well, arguably, all priests are genuine communists because they communally own everything.
Well, I'm talking about communists. As far as
I get your point. You know, were they supporters of the Soviet Union, that kind of thing? Yeah, I got the point. But yeah, excellent point. And we'll see where this goes. I mean, this corruption of our electoral system. Frankly, I think one of the biggest problems that has come along with the corruption of our electoral system is the fact that we're not talking about the real issues. The Romney campaign is now planning on going dirty and personal against President Obama. John Sununu yesterday saying, you know, he was. Obama grew up in Indonesia. He's not real. He doesn't know what a real American is. I mean, this is the attack that they're going to be using, and there's going to be more and more and more of this. David in Chicago, we got just a few seconds here. David.
Hi, Tom. Very quickly, your last guest. I wish you would have had a David K. Johnston as a follow-up to him, because Johnston argues that the way to get rid of corruption on politicians is you give them unlimited franking, but if they so much as take a cup of coffee, then they're prosecuted.
Right.
But getting back to...
Franking the ability to communicate with the people for free using the postal service, yeah.
He makes that argument very well. But getting back to the 1886 rule, which you wrote a book about and know very well, that was all about a tax issue.
Yep.
So the issue I wanted to bring up is, if corporations don't pay taxes, and if capital gain people get, just make their income and capital gains only pay 15%, way below wage earners, isn't there some sort of equal protection clause that one could argue legally to in terms of wage earners?
Yeah, our tax rights have been violated under the 14th Amendment. That would be a very interesting argument to make. This Supreme Court wouldn't take it, but I think previous courts might have. David, thanks for the call. Interesting suggestion. Here's a question for you. When the Romney campaign starts going after President Obama's biography, how are you going to react?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I mean, they're going to try and swift vote Obama by talking about him being a kid and smoking pot and sitting in Reverend Wright's church. Is that going to work? Do you think so? Welcome back. One last thing, and you know, on term limits, and then, of course, there's a lot of other stuff going on in the news, and we can talk about any of it. I am particularly excited that Elizabeth Warren's new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has nailed Capital One Bank. Not that I have anything against Capital One Bank, but they got somebody. All right? Isn't that great? And I'm a little horrified that the six heirs to the Walton fortune are now worth more money than 40% of all households in America, 41% of all American households combined. That's pretty shocking. But anyhow, to this last point, apropos of term limits, the whole idea that the Republicans put in place after the FDR administration was no more basically continuity of administrations. But when Roosevelt died, his vice president, Truman, was in office. And he had largely the same staff FDR had. And then when Truman ran for re-election, he kept that staff. So you could say that you had, you know, you could argue that you had six consecutive terms of basically Roosevelt, Truman. I mean, Truman wasn't his VP for his first three terms, but he was there. He was actually in the Senate. But or, you know, Hubert Humphrey, LBJ's vice president, tried to run for president. Richard Nixon, Dwight Eisenhower's vice president, ultimately ran for president, became president. The more contemporary example is George Herbert Walker Bush. He was vice president during the Reagan administration, basically ran the Reagan administration during the last 4 to 6 years. And when he became president, he kept virtually the entire staff. So you had 12 years of continuity there. If you're trying to blow up continuity, it doesn't seem like the way to do it. Maurice in Freeport, Illinois. Hey, Maurice, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today, man?
Great. What's on your mind?
It's going to take more than 4 years, more than 8 years to get us out of this mess. So, I mean, the Republicans blocked that years ago. So, like you said, for the continuity aspect, us as Democrats, we need to get out there and vote and let our voice be heard, because once these Republicans get this thing, once they buy this election, it's going to be a long time before we get it back.
Yeah, I absolutely agreed. Well said, Maurice. Thank you very much. Marilyn in Berkeley, Michigan. Hey, Marilyn. Thanks for listening to WDTW. What's up?
Well, thank you for taking my call. Michigan adopted term limits a while back, and mm-hmm. it has been an absolute disaster.
How so?
The lobbyists are running the state legislature. Bottom line, there are term limits. They're called elections.
Right.
And government is too complex. You know, you're elected. They allow our representatives to be allowed to be reelected two more times. So they have 6 years.
Right.
In the Senate, they may have 8 years. And then what happens is after they've spent time in the House of Representatives, then they switch and run for the Senate.
For the
Senate. If the goal was to eliminate professional politicians from running government, it's not working.
Right. And then after they leave the Senate, they go to work as a lobbyist, and now they're still working in Lansing.
Or they come back to local government and run for a county position.
Yeah.
I have served as mayor in this community and finished mm-hmm. my term last November. I mm-hmm. retired for the mm-hmm. second time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And but all I see up in Lansing is just, I mean, it's been dreadful.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way it has operated.
And this I'm sorry. Finish your sentence.
Well, it's not the solution.
Yes.
Whatever the problem is, it's supposed to solve.
Yeah, I totally agree. And in fact, what you're describing in Michigan is the predictable outcome. There has to be a permanent infrastructure of governance. And
right.
I remember when Bernie Sanders, I mean, I've been able to watch this from, you know, not from too afar, but, you know, Bernie's on this show every single week.
Yeah.
And he was, when he first started coming on our show 8 years ago, he was a congressman. He was the congressman from Vermont. He was a member of that U.S. House of Representatives. And then 6 years ago, he ran for the United States Senate and won. And so on this show, he made the transition from being a congressman to a senator. And I remember how many times I was fascinated by how many times in the first, I don't know, 6 months or so after he became a senator, people would call, because, you know, there's anybody can call and ask any question they want, pretty much. And people would call and they'd ask questions. And Bernie would frequently in the early days as a senator. Now, I mean, now he's been there 6 years. He's got it figured out. But he would say, you know, I'm not really sure about the Senate rules on that, and I'm going to have to check with some of my colleagues,
right.
and I'll have to
right.
get back with you. Because it takes a while to figure out how an institution works.
Absolutely. And government is so complex today.
Yeah.
It's very simplistic to believe that you can, well, and especially that gentleman was suggesting, what, that 4 years or something?
Yeah.
You don't even know where the bathrooms are.
Yeah, you're basically figuring it out.
Years.
You're basically figuring it out.
It's just way too complex, and there's no doubt in my mind that the lobbyists, you know, where do you go for answers if you're new at it?
Right. Yeah. Excellent
point. You go
to
ask someone who will tell you, and the lobbyists are very happy to do that.
Well, especially since most of them were legislators themselves, and so that's
right.
Where the institutional
right.
memory resides, is in the lobbying infrastructure. Marilyn, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to WDTW. Matt in Fort Worth, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. You like term limits.
I love term limits. I would love the idea of it, because that way I think we would get more people in there that want to serve instead of just ride out a career as a politician. I don't think that the framers, and I'm not in their head, so I don't know for sure, but I don't think that the framers ever had any idea that anyone would ever want to serve as a career politician. I mean,
actually, most of the framers were career politicians. John Jay, he ended up, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. George Mason, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, virtually all of these guys were career politicians. Not all of them, but probably 70% of them. I'd recommend you go back and read Federalist Number 72. You know, Alexander Hamilton in Federalist 72 was talking about how because there was this debate about term limits and whether they should be in the Constitution. And Hamilton was saying in Federalist 72 that you don't want to have term limits, because then people would be corrupted by what they are looking forward to when they leave political office. My concern isn't somebody being a career politician. I mean, you know, I could turn that argument around, Matt, and say, people get in there and they get corrupt and they get entrenched. I've seen the same thing with doctors who are starting to take too much money from the drug companies, right? Should we say all doctors can practice for 6 years and then they have to leave? Do you want a doctor operating on you who's only been in practice for four or five years, who's only done a couple hundred of those surgeries?
Well, no.
Okay. So do you want a politician who is running your country and who may be deciding whether or not you're literally life and death issues, whether you're going to go to war, whether your kids are going to be drafted, whether if you're accused of a crime, you're going to end up being executed? Do you want that politician to have less experience than the surgeon?
Well, when you say politicians, are you talking about like judges?
I'm talking about elected officials. People who are answerable to we, the people who make the laws. Politicians make laws. That's the one unique thing that they have the ability to do. I would like people making laws who are committed to the process of making laws, not who are thinking, okay, I'm out of here in 4 years, so I've got to spend these 4 years sucking up to the, I got to pick an industry. Okay, it's going to be the oil industry. And for my 4 years, I'm going to suck up to the oil industry as hard as I can, because when I leave here, I can get a job making $1 million a year in the oil industry, because I'm going to be forced out of here. I'd rather have somebody who says, I'm going to spend like Charlie Rangel. I'm going to be 74 years old running for Congress. I'm going to spend my life in this job, and my attention is going to be to the people that I have to answer to every 2 years in the election. Now, I can't say that Charlie Rangel is the most sterling example of that, or any politician these days, although I think Charlie's done a pretty good job of representing his district over the years. But my point is, he's been in Congress forever, and there's a lot of people who have been there for a long time, and they're there because they're serving their districts, by and large. Don't we want that?
No, I see it as I see it from the other side than you, I guess, because I see it as somebody who knows, hey, I'm only going to be able to go there for, two terms, three terms, whatever it be.
Right.
So I want to go there and do service to the country. Which you're talking to, a veteran from the military, and that's the way I see things.
Right.
I didn't go into the military so that I could, work the system. I went there to serve my country.
Right. And you could serve your country in the military for 20 years and have a decent retirement. Why not be able to serve your country as a legislator for 20 years?
Because I think after a while you get corrupt with the power. The military, everyone answers to somebody.
Right.
Well,
in politics, you answer to the people.
To the voters.
Right.
Supposedly, you answer to the voters.
Well, then let's work. Let's work on creating a system, Matt, where our politicians are forced to respond to us. Because if you put term limits into place, they're then forced to respond to the lobbyists.
Like with the Obamacare thing, these guys didn't even want to hold town halls because they were getting torn up over their support of it because it was a horrible law. And they just didn't want to hear it because they wanted to shove it down our throats.
Actually, the Democrats were holding town halls on Obamacare all over the country. It was the Republicans who were having problems with this.
You had
the Tea Partiers who were hysterical about it. Let's just agree that we're both patriotic Americans and we want what's best for our country. Doesn't it seem to you like what's rotting, what's corrupting, and what corrupted Obamacare, for that matter, was the money from the big insurance companies saying, hey, base the system on insurance companies getting money. The money from Big Pharma saying, hey, make it so we don't have to negotiate with the government. Wasn't it money that corrupted that system?
I think it's power.
Well, yeah, but I don't think that you can disentangle money from power. But, you know, I get your point, Matt, but I guess we'll have to agree to disagree. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Yeah, and maybe the umbrella, too.
Ain't that good news, man, ain't that news. Ain't that news,
ain't that good news. Ain't that news, yes. The great news comes from the Talk Radio News Service, of course. TalkRadioNews.com and Ellen Ratner, the Washington Bureau Chief and Grand Poobah of Talk Radio News, right here in the studio.
So today I was at the New Balance, was sort of not a hearing, it was a presser. New Balance is trying to, and they brought a lot of workers to the Hill, trying to get the trade agreement that the president wants to sign to be a little more generous towards American shoe manufacturers who are manufacturing shoes in the United States, such as New Balance. Now, not all of New Balance's are made in the United States, but the CEO of New Balance told me that in Vietnam, which is second to China in shoe production, that workers get paid 49 cents an hour versus in Maine, where New Balance pays 16 versus an hour.
$16.
That's right. So if, in fact, there is this trade agreement which essentially punishes U.S. by taking away any tariffs whatsoever, right, this is really going to wipe out entire towns of Maine and part of Massachusetts.
Wow. And not just there. I mean, any place where any kind of manufacturing is.
Right.
Going
this
on.
Is an example.
Yeah. Remarkable.
So that's going on. Okay, also, as you know, there was a bus blast in Bulgaria. Israel is blaming Iran. They're saying that they're going to react strongly.
This was an Israeli tour bus.
An Israeli tour
Bulgaria.
Bus, that's right. Okay. We know that at least three people were killed. Four people killed, 20 others injured, 40 Israeli tourists.
Yikes. Is there any solid evidence of who is behind it?
Well, I mean, they're saying that this fits the pattern of what has gone on with Iran and that Israel is saying that they are going to take action. So they're not pretty. Speaking of taking action, Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta was at the Pentagon today. He is calling on Syria to safeguard their stocks of chemical weapons. He says that they clearly have it, and he said it's responsible. They are responsible for securing that, and he also described the situation in Syria as rapidly spinning out of control.
Yeah.
Now, on one more interesting issue, an aide to Hillary Clinton's name is Huma. I never can pronounce her correct name. It's Abdin, I think.
Anthony Weiner's wife.
Well,
yeah.
Apparently,
Anthony.
Michelle Bachmann took a report that was issued by a very right-wing group and went after her, saying that her family was members of the Muslim Brotherhood and that she was being preferential.
Right.
None other than John McCain got on the floor of the Senate today to defend Huma and to say that this was outrageous. He said, what is at stake is a matter, this matter is even larger than the reputation of one person. This is about who we are as a nation and who we aspire to be. Went right after Michelle Bachmann.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, that's...
And Michelle Bachmann, I mean, she was a big supporter of the Northern Alliance, which is like, you know, a bunch of heroin smugglers in Afghanistan. She's on the side of MEK, which is
right.
MEK, which is, you know, a terrorist organization officially, according to the United States government. Who's she to talk about this?
I mean, you wonder what her shtick was on this.
I think that she just latches on to any wild conspiracy theory that goes along and runs with it.
Boy, wouldn't you like to live for 10 minutes in her head and figure out what goes on?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. There is, today at the White House, the press secretary, Carney, he went after the Romney people because, of course, they're now saying that this welfare reform issue that the president's trying to do, he's gutting welfare reform, he's allowing states to have alternative strategies, et cetera, that they can say that they're not going to have this work requirement. Well, apparently, there was a 2005 letter written by the Republican Governors Association urging Congress to pass an extension of this that would allow increased waiver authority. And who signed it?
George.
Governor Romney.
Oh, Governor Romney. Oh, my. Oh, my. Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. Also,
what do you think, by the way, of the reports? NBC News, I think, is reporting this, that sources inside the Romney campaign have said that they're going to go dirty on Obama's biography. They're going to start talking about him smoking pot as a kid, to trying cocaine.
Already, I hear on Indonesia. All the talk rate, when I bring up the tax returns, I just heard from a station in Massachusetts, not exactly my most right-wing station, saying, well, what about his college grades? I said, wait a minute. Offshore accounts, when you're running for president, that you've done as an adult are a little different than somebody's college grades.
Right.
But that's the kind of thing they're starting to attack. And then look at Arpaio's press conference yesterday where he said none of it is true. I mean, of course, he's a wackadoodle.
Oh, he's saying that Obama wasn't even born in the country.
I mean, he's a wackadoodle-doo, yeah. And, of course, he's under investigation by the Justice Department, so that's kind of interesting.
Right.
But also, Sander Levin, a Democrat of Michigan, along with Dick Durbin of Illinois, Senator, are saying that they want this disclosure asked to reduce tax havens, and they want people to have to report any assets they have out of the country if they're running for federal public office.
Now, that's a direct slap at Romney, because in his 2010 tax returns that he did release, he acknowledged that he had a Swiss bank account, but he didn't release the FBAR filing, the foreign banking filing, that gives the details of the Swiss account. And you probably know this. I learned this in the 80s when I lived in Europe. If you want to have a Swiss bank account, they don't give you a toaster when you open the account.
No, they certainly don't. You don't even get interest, right?
Yeah, that's right. Not only do you not get interest, you have to pay them. You have to pay them to have a checking account or a savings account with a Swiss bank. It's incredible. I mean, it's
they do very well.
Yeah. Oh, well, you get secrecy like, you know, nobody's business. But anyway.
Exactly. So of course, it's going to go nowhere in the House, but
yeah.
It's an interesting whatever. Also today, Lockheed Martin, EADS of EADS of North America, Pratt & Whitney, they're now saying that the sequestration, that's the $500 billion over a period of 10 years, is going to devastate the defense industry. And they are now, of course, today.
Hang on just a second. It's just going to take spending back to 2003 levels, isn't it, basically?
Well, right. But that's
pre-Iraq.
They consider that a huge cut. And there was this act that actually passed the Senate, I mean the House today, 414-2, so several people didn't vote. But they want the White House to have to report within 30 days after the legislation starts the cuts to talk about how they would be carried out.
Very, very interesting. Well, I think that's actually not an unreasonable thing. That's why
it got a 14-2 vote. 414-2 vote.
I wonder who the two voted against, or 42?
Yes, it's two, and I have them written down. And,
yeah, be fascinating to know what their rationale is, whoever they are. Anyhow, Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Wow, look at that. The storm has passed through. It's really quite remarkable. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And John Nichols is on the line with us. He's the Washington correspondent for The Nation, thenation.com, and also the author of the brilliant new book, Uprising. Whenever I say the title of your book, John, it reminds me of my old friend Swami Beyondananda's saying that we need everybody in America to get wise, you know, get wiser, figure out what's going on. We need an upwising.
I like that very much.
So anyway.
And I definitely agree.
Yeah. So you've been in the UK, and there's this banking scandal going on. You've been looking into it. What have you learned?
Well, what I've learned is that we don't have much of a media when it comes to covering the real news in the world, because the LIBOR, L-I-B-O-R, banking scandal, which is the biggest story in Great Britain, even moving beyond the Olympics and other stories, is really a sort of a heart and soul tale of big banks and just how badly they will lie to us. What's been revealed is that the largest banks in the world, of course, have a consortium set up where they get to self-report the interest rates that they pay and that they see as appropriate for banking.
Right, this is the British Bankers Association, is it not?
Yeah.
Which is the trade association through which they do this reporting.
That's exactly right. And it's a London interbank
offered
reporting.
Rate. Yeah.
And what's fascinating about it is that, you know, with very, very little regulation, the banks essentially get to set the price of money for the world. They get to decide how much they pay for money and how much they charge other people for money. Now, why that's a big deal is that these are banks, many of them, not all of them, which have been bailed out by governments. And much of that bailout money that went to them with the idea that the banks would be responsible players, that they would loan money at reasonable rates, and that they would engage in helping to keep a economy vital and functional.
Mm-hmm.
What we now find out is that the biggest banks in the world were lying. They were making up their reports on what they were paying for interest, what they thought the appropriate interest rate was, and they were doing so that was in a way that was dramatically to their own advantage and to the disadvantage of free market competition and of any revitalization of the economy. The governor of the Bank of England, that's the equivalent of the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board in the United States, says that what the banks did met his definition for the word fraud.
Wow.
And so we find
and Barclays in fact has pled guilty to criminal charges, although and paid a $435 million, as I recall, or $450 million fine. But geez, nice work if you can get it. I mean, if you or I were to walk down to the local bank and say, give me $500, I don't think we'd be able to pay a $300 fine and get off.
Well, the other thing is, too, that if we made, let's say you went to a bank and you falsified your credit status, you falsified your economic status, you made up, you know, just figures right out of the sky,
you'd
actually be liable for that. You could be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Now, that's what's happened internationally, and it becomes an American scandal as well, because we learned that Tim Geithner, our Secretary of the Treasury, when he was in charge of the New York Fed, became aware of the potential for this fixing of interest rates, this falsification of interest rates, and notified the British authorities about it, but then, as best we can tell, did nothing to follow up.
Well, and in fact, the recommendations that he made to the Bank of England about this were, in some cases, lifted word for word, sentence for sentence, sentence by sentence, from recommendations that had been given to him by the big banks.
Yeah.
By U.S. banks.
I mean, but
so,
even if we give him the benefit of the doubt and we say he was doing something that was useful, the fact that he became Secretary of the Treasury of the United States in a time of incredible economic stability and great debate about how to hold banks to account, and apparently did nothing to follow up on this. We found out that for the last 3 years, we've been lied to about our interest rates, about what banks are doing.
Yeah. Now, I had a theory. And this either reveals the limits of my knowledge of how this works or my insights into it. The banks were actually depressing interest rates, or lying in a way that served to depress interest rates, by saying that their interbank lending rates, overnight interbank lending rates, were lower than they actually were, because that was a sign of strength.
So
you could argue that it was like a lie of vanity. You know, hey, we're better off than that. You don't have to worry about this. But it seems to me that if the banks are reporting a low LIBOR rate, that's the rate at which you know, funds are against which funds are pegged for lending. And the, but the reality, the banks know that the reality is that the risk premium is so much higher than that, that they really wouldn't be willing to lend at that. And yet that's the rate at which commercial paper is being sold. That's the rate at which, you know, a corporation or a mortgage holder would have to borrow relative to. Since it's been artificially lowered, no bank is going to lend at those rates. Thus, you have a liquidity crisis. Thus, you know, the banks are saying, you know, on the one hand, they're saying, oh, we're just fine. We're lending at these really low rates. But then somebody comes to them and says, great, I want to start a factory. I want to expand my factory. Please lend me money. And say, no, we can't do that. We won't lend money. And that's exactly what happened. We had a year and a half there where the banks locked up and refused to lend. And I'm wondering if that, if there's a straight line relationship between that and the lies about LIBOR.
There's simply no question that there is, Tom. In fact, this is coming out in the British inquiries into this. But it is also something else. These banks were getting money cheap and right. then sitting on it. And so they got the money for a very, very low rate. They did not loan it out.
Right.
They had that money in their accounts.
Well, they didn't loan it out because they were pegging the rates low in a way that would be stupid to loan out. And so they kind of tied their own hands.
But they also got money.
But yeah, and to this day, John, you've got banks that are borrowing from the Fed at 0.01%, and then they're buying treasuries with that, where the U.S. Treasury Department is paying them 2% interest, and then they pay back the Fed at 0.01%. You know, and you do this with a couple hundred billion dollars or a couple trillion dollars, and you make millions and millions of hundred billions of dollars in profits for doing absolutely nothing. And where's all that money coming from? All of it is coming out of tax dollars, out of the U.S. Treasury.
And there's one final thing, Tom. They're creating a false impression, as you suggested briefly there, of their own stability.
Right.
Now, this is a big deal, and it's where this thing is all going to come crumbling down because they lied to their own investors. And you are already seeing billions and billions of dollars worth of lawsuits being filed by investors saying, hold it. You created the impression of a stability that simply did not exist.
Right. It would be the equivalent of General Motors saying when they sold 400,000 cars in a month or a quarter or whatever, saying, actually, we sold 700,000 cars. We're doing just great. And so their stock goes up 5 points. Everybody buys
right.
in. But wait a minute. And then it comes out they lied about the number of cars they sold.
This is a big scandal, Tom. And it is only beginning to get discussed in the U.S. Bernanke being asked a little bit about it by Congress.
Yeah.
We need to have a lot more attention.
But the banks own this town. You know, I mean, they really do. There's so much power. Are they using the are they spelling it LIEBOR in the British headlines yet?
No. They should be LIE-BOR.
Yeah.
But they're look. This is such a big scandal in Britain. It is such a front page big deal scandal that it actually has the possibility of destabilizing the government. And so they're treating it very, very seriously. I just wish our media was treating it as seriously because it's the same banks and it's the same money.
Well, I think one of the big differences is that the average Brit is actually well-informed and the average American has infotainment when they turn TV on.
It's very true. And also, in Britain, they have a much more combative media, the media that is still willing to ask bankers.
Oh, yeah. And Prime Minister's questions is just the most fun thing in the world. Yes. John Nichols with The Nation, thenation.com, and author of the brilliant new book, Uprising. John, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be with you.
Thanks for the report and for getting over there and getting the story for us. It's great. We'll be right back. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, again, I asked this question earlier. I'm genuinely curious. When the Romney campaign starts the personal attacks against Obama, how should Obama respond?
They counted out our money, and no banker was nearby. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the White House, no banker was nearby.
So, Gustav Mahler in our chat room says, OMG, Obama campaign releases two dancing horse ads. Apparently they're over at Daily Kos. I got to get over there and see those during the next break. That sounds like a hoot. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number, Fred in Lake Elsinore, California. Hey, Fred, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. I was wondering, why can't the federal government borrow money at the discount window from the Federal Reserve? at the 0.01 that you just mentioned?
Because the way the law has been written, not only can the federal government not borrow from the Fed, but, well, technically they can. The way that the federal government, it's not that the federal government can borrow from the Fed, it's that the Fed can loan to the federal government. And the way that they do that is buying treasury bills. And this is what's referred to right now as quantitative easing. That's the Fed buying treasury bills. But here's the gotcha. Arguably, the Fed should be able to buy treasury bills at, you know, say the T-bills are selling at 1.5%. The Fed should be able to buy them at 1.5%. But the law says, and this has only been the law since the 1950s, the law says that the only way that the Fed can buy T-bills is by going through a commercial bank. So the banksters, and the banksters take a commission on the sale. So whenever the Fed buys treasury bills, in other words, loans money to the federal government, or whenever the federal government borrows money from the Fed, and it can and it does, then, you know, then a banker in the middle makes a small fortune, because we're talking about trillions. And, you know, 1% of a trillion is a million. So that's actually 1% of a trillion is 10 billion. No. I can't do math.
Anyway. Well, like you said, the New York banks borrow at 0.01, and they buy a 30-year treasury bond at 3%, 4%, and they make the spread. But the federal government is borrowing money all the time, and they're paying 3%, 4% when they should get it from the discount window at the 0.01.
Yep. I agree with you.
Like you just said,
I agree with you.
They can't do it.
No, and
this
is why the Fed should be nationalized. This is why we should get the banksters out of the way, and the Fed should no longer be owned. By the way, the Fed is owned by the 12 biggest banks in America. You know, the Federal Reserve banks, and those banks are owned by their member banks, and they're all owned by individual commercial stockholders. You know, people who own stock. You can become an owner of the Fed simply by buying, you know, stock in one of the banks that's a member of the Federal Reserve System. And it shouldn't be. The Fed should be nationalized. And you know, Canada tried this for a couple of years, but then the pressure from the banksters got so great that the politicians, you know, reprivatized their Fed. And, you know, it's a terrible experience here. Fred, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Rodney in Chicago Heights. Hey, Rodney, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, I had a brain fart there.
That's okay.
The Consumer Protection Agency.
Sure. Consumer Finance.
Capital One, yeah.
Yeah, I'm brain farting on it, too. Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, I think. CFPB,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I heard that, you know, part of the settlement was their payment protection, and I was utilizing that for a while, and I had moved and changed my address, and I'd been living at my new address for about 6 months, and then, you know, I got my statement saying that, well, yeah, you failed to respond, and so, you know, you got over the limit fees and all these other fees, so I got in contact with them and told them what's going on. They told me to fill out the paperwork. I gave them all the documentation, you know, along with a letter saying that I was going to be contacting the state attorney general, and I didn't appreciate them, you know, just playing games.
Right.
Because what they had done, they had sent the form that you have to fill out every, like, 3 months to an address that I hadn't used or hadn't lived at for like 6 years.
Is this Capital One?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is the company that got nailed by the CFPB. I mean, I've never had a bank send me a form I had to fill out every 3 months.
Right, yeah. Well, and then, you know, when it came due again, well, they sent it, you know.
And is it like if you don't fill the form out, then you automatically buy their product?
No. If you don't fill the form out, if you're on the payment protection, well then you lose your eligibility.
Oh.
So you know, so therefore I got, you know, all the late fees and over the limit fees.
Oh,
so I wrote them a letter, sent them all the documentation, and told them I'd be contacting the
Attorney back down?
General. Yeah, it took about a month and a half, you know, but they, you know, they got it straightened out,
good.
Then I dropped the protection, but, yeah,
Yeah. So that story has a good ending. But Rodney, thank you for sharing your experience with us. I appreciate it. Mike in Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Not much, Tom. Just out here in the middle of the developing Arabian desert.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this great drought we've had 7% of the U.S. corn crop is gone. That's scary.
I know. You are so right on about the misinformed public, and I think that the greatest threat right now, and I view it as a propaganda tool, is Fox so-called news.
Mm-hmm.
I turn over to Fox every once in a while and watch them. I was watching The Five. Mm. Oh, my God. Those people are so disgusting.
I've never seen it, so I can't speak to it.
Just flick it over sometime, watch it. Talk about lying and, you know, they're the GOP mouthpiece.
Sure.
And,
well, I mean, you know, Fox News, it's owned by a billionaire, Rupert Murdoch. And it's run by Roger Ailes, who proposed GOP TV in the Nixon administration.
Oh, no, and he's a foreigner. My God.
Murdoch. Well, yeah, he's a U.S. citizen now, but... he came from Australia.
Well, he was, but yeah. Fair. And so here we go. Fair and balanced. I got a question. Were the scales ever calibrated?
Okay, that's a good one. That's a very good one. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. I mean, I'll just, you know, one of my little going in and out slogans is fair and only slightly unbalanced. I mean, you know, let's be upfront about it. I have a bias. Fox doesn't have a bias. What astounds me is that there are actually people who watch Fox who think that there's no bias. It baffles me. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And it turns out that Mitt Romney has not released all of his 2010 tax returns. We're still waiting for the information on the Swiss bank accounts. The bad and the very, very hippomaniacally ugly. The good. RT, the network on which you can watch my TV show every night at 9 p.m. Eastern, is the most watched news source on YouTube. That's according to a Pew Research study finding that RT tops the likes of Fox News, the BBC, ABC News, and even the Associated Press with more than 8% of total news viewership on YouTube. When the mainstream media fails us, alternative news has an opening, and RT is taking advantage of it. Well done. The bad. The Tea Party. Congressman Sean Duffy. Duffy's not the biggest fan of talking to constituents and believes that holding one town hall a year to meet with voters is plenty. At least that's what he told one constituent yesterday as he was leaving a meeting in Wausau, Wisconsin. Duffy was asked what his thoughts were on increasing the minimum wage, and the answer the constituent got? Car door slammed in his face, a rolled-up window, and tires screeching away. So meet Congressman Sean Duffy, the most inaccessible congressman in America. And the very, very ugly Brian Fisher, the head of the American Family Association, went on the radio to call President Obama a street thug with, quote, the mindset of a juvenile delinquent, end quote. He also went on to say the president is, quote, dismantling American values, end quote. We all know that calling the president a street thug is dog whistle to white racists, something that Brian Fisher has never shied away from. And if pushing marriage equality is tantamount to destroying American values, then Brian Fisher has no American values. And that's very, very ugly. Okay, Mitt Romney. First of all, you know, President Obama said, and let me just give you this quote, and I commend you to Jed Lewison's post over at the Daily Coast. It's up on the main page right now. And thank you, Jeb, for pointing this out. President Obama said, somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you've got a business, you didn't build that, the roads and bridges. Somebody else made that happen, right? In other words, you've got a business that here we are, me and Shano and Jim and Paul, and we were sitting here because and Danielle is here, Sean working on the show, Louise. We're able to do this because there's roads and bridges. Now, I've got a business I built, but I didn't build the roads and bridges. So the president said, quote, somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. Now, the Republicans and Fox News and all these other idiots, they've taken out that somebody invested in roads and bridges sentence that prefaces it, completely twisted it out of its meaning, and Fox has been pounded on this and every right-wing talk show host in America for a couple of days. Here's where it gets interesting. This is Mitt Romney today, and let me get the, where did he say this? Oh, it's not in the, but this is, it's a town hall meeting in Ohio. Mitt Romney, listen to this.
I know that you recognize a lot of people. Oh, don't sit down. I want you still up. Keep standing up. I know that you recognize a lot of people help you in a business. Perhaps the banks, the investors. There's no question your mom and dad, your school teachers, the people that provide roads, the fire, the police. A lot of people help.
But What? Wait a minute. Romney's saying the same thing Obama did? Really?
Let me ask you this. Did you build your business? If you did, raise your hand. Take
well,
that, Mr. President.
Okay.
This is
yeah.
what's happening in this country. These people are entrepreneurs. Thank you so much, you guys.
Okay. Well, he continues. I did build my business, but I didn't build the roads and bridges. So, you know, Romney continues
by,
with his...
By the way, there are a lot of people in government who help us and allow us to have an economy that works.
Really?
And allow entrepreneurs and business leaders of various kinds to start
right.
businesses and create
really?
Jobs.
Allow
we
us
all
to?
Recognize that. That's an important thing. Don't forget, by the way, government doesn't invent those people out of thin air. We pay for those people with our taxes. We're paying for those resources that we receive.
Right. So we... But over at Fox News, somebody has got to be screaming right now, put a bag over his head, quick! Right? Romney talking about how, you know, there's people in government who make it possible for business to function? So just consider the jujitsu of this. The president comes out and says, somebody invested in roads and bridges. Now, his big mistake was using the word that instead of those, because that's plural, right? There's two... arguably two different things. What he meant was infrastructure. He's talking about that infrastructure. So he said, if you build a business, you didn't build that infrastructure. Somebody else built that infrastructure, those roads and bridges. The president says that. And you and I get the message. We understand the message. So the Romney campaign does two things. And this is just incredible. I mean, truly incredible. Think about this from a political point of view. First of all, they distort the message. They suggest that what the president said is if you build a business, you didn't build your business. When what the president said is if you built a business, you didn't build the infrastructure that your business uses. Okay? So first they distort the message. And then they steal the message. What you just heard Romney say is the exact same thing the president was saying day before yesterday. That they're condemning him for. Tell me this isn't making your head explode. I mean, this is, I will say it again. The only way this man can win as president, the only way Mitt Romney can win as president is by lying. Because if there was an honest discussion in America about what's really going on, what's happening in our body politic, what's, you know, how American politics works, how business works in America, if there was an honest discussion about it, and President Obama is saying, yes, let's build the infrastructure of this country. Let's have a better rail system so that we can transport goods and people. Let's have, you know, let's improve our roads and highways. Let's improve our airports. Let's make more efficient. You know, let's stop being dependent on foreign fuels. And Romney's saying, let's give tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires, raise taxes on working class people. And he's saying that. He's not denying it. He's bragging about it. Two tax rates. Raise the taxes on people who don't pay any taxes at all so that they are paying some taxes, federal income taxes, and lower the taxes on people like Mitt Romney. That's his pitch. And he's saying, no, don't invest in infrastructure, except now he's saying maybe we should invest in infrastructure. It just, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing. I don't know how to say it beyond that. Craig in Salem, Oregon. Hey, Craig, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. If Mitt Romney didn't own Bain Capital and didn't operate it after 99, between 99 and 2004, all those federal documents that he signed in violation of the law, was he lying then or is he lying now?
Right. Well, this is the question that Stephanie Cutter, I believe there was... Steph, one of the people who works on the Obama campaign asked this question. You know, is Mitt Romney lying to the American people, or is he a felon? Is he lying to the Security Exchange Commission, which is a crime? And I think you've nailed it, Craig. You've absolutely nailed it. Thanks a lot for the call. Sam in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, says you want to disagree with me. What's on your mind?
No, I disagree, Tom. I don't like to disagree. I'm sorry. How are you today?
I'm fine. What's on your mind?
Tom, you know, I'm just confused because I'm a 31-year-old man, and I have a family. I run my own business.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch Fox, and I watch MSNBC, I listen to Patriot, I listen to Left, and it's all the same.
It's not all the same. If you think it's all the same, you haven't been paying attention.
Everybody...
Which party wants to disclose the identity of all the people putting money into politics?
Both parties.
No, it's the Democratic Party wants to disclose the identity. The Republican Party just filibustered the bill for the second time in 3 years. More than that.
I'm sorry. I just disagree in the fact that they both take care of their own. Our system is so corrupt on both sides.
It is
so disheartening for a young man that works very hard every day.
Sam, have you ever shown up at a political party meeting? You consider yourself a conservative.
No.
I'm assuming you vote Republican. Have you ever shown up at a Republican Party meeting?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Let me please, respectfully, and I genuinely mean this respectfully, we need people like you in the Republican Party, people who see the corruption there. I see the corruption in the Democratic Party. I'm not going to deny it. And we need good people in the Democratic Party, too. You need to show up at your local Republican Party, become a precinct committee person, become a participant. The precinct committee people, it's a voluntary position in most states and in most places. It's local politics, and they're the ones who write the party platform. They're the ones who pick who the candidates are going to be, the primary candidates. And of course, once you pick the primary candidates, you pretty much winnowed out the field. You've decided, by and large, who's going to be, you know, running for office. And there's incredible political power to be had there. And they are, you know, both parties, all parties, I mean, the Green Party, the Constitutional Party, the, you know, fill in the blanks, they're all looking for people to show up and participate. Let me please encourage you, if you've got a good heart and you really care about the future of this country and you're horrified by the corruption in your party, in the Republican Party, become part of the party.
I will take that suggestion wholeheartedly, and I do feel that, you know, there's nothing going on positive right now. We're fighting about all the wrong things. You know, it's a shame.
Yeah,
I
wouldn't say it in quite such dark terms, but I don't disagree. I think a lot of our politics and a lot of our discussions and debates are distractions, and the really serious issues like why aren't our jobs in America anymore, nobody's even willing to discuss in either party, frankly. And yeah, I mean, you know, my dad was a Republican his whole entire life. He and I used to, you know, from the time I was 17 years old, we fought and debated constantly, more debated than fought. But I honored his respect for this country and for his party, and he participated. Please do the same, Sam. The Republican Party needs good people like you. Thanks for listening. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Okay, so LIBOR is now the new Romney slogan? Oh, it's LIMOR. I'm sorry. Ho, ho, get this. The Democrats in the House of Representatives are going to put forward legislation requiring that all candidates for president release 10 years worth of tax returns. Because you have to be at least 35 years old to run for president, so presumably you've paid taxes for at least 10 years. And, I mean, it's the only office that actually has an age requirement. So this is going to be interesting. This is going to be real interesting. Amazing. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. Brenda in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Hey, Brenda, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. What's up?
You asked the question, what I think Obama should do if Romney, you know, started bad-mouthing him.
Right.
I think he ought to open up and do what FDR did and what Eisenhower did, and asked Romney the redneck, how do you like me now?
Yeah. He should. I'm sorry.
Borrow the money. He should borrow the money from the reserve.
Right.
And don't give it to the banks or nobody else.
Right.
Just borrow the money from the reserves, put it into structuring back to the United States, and put these people back to work.
Oh, yeah. You mean do like the CCC and the WPA and the RT, whatever they all were. You got this. Here's what I think he should do. I think he should say something, and I agree with you. He should go Roosevelt, and here's how Franklin Roosevelt handled it when they went after him.
Never before in all our history have these forces been so united against one candidate as they stand today. They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
So that's what I think that's what I think President Obama should say, Brenda. Brenda, I got to move along.
I think so too, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. And Otis in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. Hey, Otis, what's up?
Oh, hi. I wanted to come in on what has been said about the elections and Congress and being corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that money is the big problem in political arena.
Right.
Our total electorate system from state level on up, and I'm not sure about earlier county, city, and so forth, but it's the most corrupt system in the entire world because elected officials are totally owned.
Including our judges now. More than 90% of all judges are elected. And
right. This
is all because of one group of people, one group of nine people. It's the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has done to this nation what no Supreme Court, no legislature has done to any other developed nation. And that is to say that monetary corruption of politics is a good thing. It's a desirable thing. It is the law of the land. And
and
they are wrong. They should not have the authority to say that. We need to go to movetoamend.org. You can see a constitutional amendment to roll it back. I mean, it is wrong. There's just, you know, no other way to say it beyond that. So, Otis, thank you. I think you put your finger right on it.
I just want to make another comment on, there was some talk about solving the problem. And I kind of disagree with you on the voter doing it because I have become so disenchanted with voters. First of all, voting turnout is so low.
Yeah.
And then the people that I have talked to recently, and this has been in the last 3 or 4 days that I've talked to, that have no clue as to facts. They
are
basing their opinion on crazy stuff.
Yeah, on Fox News or the latest email they got.
People that I consider intelligent voters, you know, so when that situation exists, it really shows you where the voting, so the voting wouldn't really solve the problem. Also, you were saying the representatives representing their constituencies or their districts, that's a problem also because then you get this representative, all he's concerned about is whether the people in his district, and you know how the districts
right.
are set up.
Right, they're all gerrymandered.
Totally
no, I got your point, Otis, and it's well made. I want to get some more. We need to let some other people call in here. Sean in Hastings, Michigan. Hey, Sean.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm new to this. So anyways, earlier when I called your show, there was somebody talking about possibly suing the banks in Britain over potential losses to the LIBOR.
Right.
Couldn't the same thing be applied to Bain Capital? If a person lost even a dollar during the Romney years when he wasn't supposedly there, but they were under the pretense that he was actually leading it,
right.
wouldn't there be liable for that?
Couldn't there be a stockholder lawsuit for misrepresentation? Well, arguably there could, although he was publicly saying that he wasn't there. But it's an interesting possibility. You know, pardon? Yeah, he was. Actually, there wouldn't be a stockholder lawsuit because Romney was the only stockholder. He owned 100% of the stock. Frank in Wausau, Wisconsin. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Hi, Tom. This is Frank from Wausau. Yeah. You know, I always hear him saying all the time, these corporations are moving overseas because of the bad tax laws and stuff in this country. They're moving over there because of the low wages and there's no regulations over there. Isn't that true?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're moving their manufacturing operations over there. They keep their sales operations here because they want our money. But, you know, but they don't, yeah, absolutely. John in Davenport, Iowa. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Good day, sir. I should like to point out one small thing. Despite the numbers, I feel that this president has done a spectacular job. If you notice one thing, you cannot walk two blocks without seeing a sidewalk being repaired. You cannot drive 2 miles without seeing a road being worked on or a bridge being replaced.
Yeah, that's the stimulus bill. Yeah, and it's a good thing. It absolutely is. John, thank you for the call. Coming up tomorrow, well, the latest on Bain and Romney's tax returns as the pressure mounts for him to release them. What is he trying to hide? Plus, my favorite segment of the week, Geeky Science Rocks. Scientists have figured out where animals get their magnetic sense. And the best of the rest of the news and your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Get out there, get active, occupy something. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.